Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right, hello again, everybody. It is another week, another big week in politics. Jason Wheeler here with my cohort, Jason Whiteley, working remotely still, but joined on a Zoom meeting as we are watching the Republican convention playing out this week from Charlotte and through cyberspace as well. Jason, we were supposed to be there.
We did get our money back, I think, on the Airbnb we had reserved there. But, you know, this whole election season, just like 2020, it's been nuts. We were supposed to be in Milwaukee last week for the DNC. That didn't happen. We're going to go to Charlotte. And then that got changed to Jacksonville. So we're trying to figure out how we go from Milwaukee to Jacksonville driving, since they don't want us flying on planes with COVID. And then it went back to Charlotte. Now it's going to be in Charlotte for a couple of days and then in D.C. But, you know, nevertheless, we can all see it, which is the good news. And, you know, conventions, as you know, Jason, are for two big things: to nominate the next president and vice president of the United States for each respective party. And number two, to formally lay out what everyone believes in that political party. It's called a platform.
And that's why you get everybody together, whether it be in person or remotely, to talk about, hey, here's what we believe in. Voters, if you believe like we believe, come on aboard and vote for us. Here is what we stand for. Here's what we plan to do as a party with our candidate in these next 4 years if you give us your votes.
And Representative Matt Krause tweeted something that I woke up to this morning, and I'm pulling it up here on Twitter. And, you know, I get up in the morning. First thing I check is my phone and to see what people are tweeting. And the first thing he tweeted out was opening line to his tweet: "This is a mistake, folks. Parties should revolve around principles, not personalities. It's always a good exercise to flesh out those principles every 4 years." And I'm thinking, what in the world's going on here? Evidently, the Republican National Convention, the committee, has created and passed a resolution where they are essentially taking bullet points of things they believe in, as opposed to creating this big document that they have every year. And they're essentially saying, you know, kind of what we did in 2016 is kind of what we're for right now in 2020. And, you know, it's all about President Trump. And I think there's a line in there to suggest something about that. And before you start emailing me and putting our podcast on pause and finding another one, let me find this line here. It says that, where is this line, Jason? "The RNC enthusiastically supports President Trump, continues to reject the policy positions of Obama Biden, as well as those espoused by the DNC today. Therefore, be it resolved that the RNC, Republican Party, has and will continue to enthusiastically support the president's America First agenda." Now, you expect that because he's the president. He got elected, and the president who's in power is the one who is leading his or her political party. Representative Matt Krause, and I'm sure there are others who might not be coming forward, like this state representative who is a Republican from Fort Worth. He said, you know what, we appreciate the personalities, but it's about policy. And these documents live a lot longer than an individual does in office, let's say, for their political terms, Jason.
Yeah, so all of that being said, though, he is excited about the convention. He is excited about the candidate. He is excited about their possibilities as a party, both here in Texas and nationally. And so we decided, let's get him on the line here and talk to him about all of this, since we are in the big week of the Republican National Convention this week. And we caught him. It looks like he's on his way to Galveston.
Hey, Representative Krause, how are you, man?
Hey, I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Doing well. We are going here for the podcast. You're on the road, it sounds like. Where are you going?
Actually heading down to the Galveston area. I've got some legislative tourism caucus meetings that we had planned for weeks. So we're hoping we don't have to turn around and drive back, but that's where we're headed.
Isn't it stormy out there?
It's supposed to be. It may not hit very hard until about Wednesday or Thursday, but we're just keeping an eye on it. I've had these meetings set for weeks, and the tourism industry is just being crushed right now. So we're just trying to figure out ways to work with them. So I wanted to make those meetings, if at all possible.
Okay, so it is convention week, and here you are on the road trying to make other things happen. Life goes on, but tell us a little bit about this week and what you're expecting and how you feel right now.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good week. I think when you have these conventions back-to-back, you really get to see the stark lines that contrast the two parties. And I really feel the Republican Party at this point in time has much more to offer than what we saw at the DNC convention last week. Seemed to be a lot of fear, a lot of anger, a lot of just a lot of gloominess and dark clouds on the horizon. And so I think this week you'll see some hope, you'll see some inspiration, you'll see some encouragement. And I think if we do that, Americans will respond really well to what we're trying to do in the Republican Party.
What does the president need to say on Thursday when he formally accepts the nomination?
Yeah, I think he needs to say as much as possible, highlight the accomplishments of the past 4 years. He needs to talk about how the economy's done really well, creating an environment where we've lowered taxes and cut regulations. I think he needs to hammer home that we don't want to defund the police. We want to defend the police. I think that's been a stark contrast these last few months about how we're handling law enforcement officials. I think we need to continue to talk about the great days of America that are ahead and how the Republican Party the last 4 years up until the pandemic hit had put us in a great position where we were more prosperous, we were more free, and we were more safe than we've been in many, many years.
Can you tell us a little bit, though, about platform? Because there has been some criticism that the Republican Party has not put forward a platform this time around like we would normally see going into a convention where all these different policy announcements are made and where everything is just sort of laid out as to what the positions are across the board. This time we're seeing something more along the lines of bullet points instead of this, sort of laid out grand vision of what 4 more years would look like under a Trump administration.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I love being a part of the Republican Party, but I was one of those that criticized the party for not laying out their platform. I think it was a huge missed opportunity for us. I never think you want to tie your agenda or your platform to a personality. It always wants to be about principles, and so the platform is the place where you articulate the principles that your party stands for. And in a presidential year for the next 4 years. And I think it's always a healthy thing. I think it's a good thing for us to go through that exercise and let Americans know, if you vote for Republicans into office, this is what you can expect: limited government, more prosperity, more security, more safety, God, family, traditional values. I think those are good things to reinforce and to let Americans know. So I wish we had done that and we had put that in our platform. That we haven't. We'll address it again in 4 years. But again, when I feel like the Democrats are going a little bit more extreme and to the left more and more, this was a good opportunity for us as Republicans to say, here's what we believe. They line up with American values. That's why we justifies a vote for us.
And you have that concern there that you start down perhaps a slippery slope of, almost, feeding into a cult of personality if you don't have the party's priorities laid out in black and white for everybody to read. And instead, it's just about person instead of party.
Well, and that's exactly right. And at the presidential level, you get 4, maybe 8 years with one person in the Oval Office from your party. And so that's it. That's a pretty short shelf life when we're talking parties and long-term governance. And so I never think you never want to tie your agenda just to a person. You always want to make it bigger than that, and you would hope that person who's heading your party would abide and run with those principles, and I think we've got a good shot at doing that. But yeah, that's why I always get a little nervous about tying anything in politics to a personality person. You always want to start with the principles and you want to go from there.
And to my knowledge, Representative Krause, it looks like that the party, the GOP, kind of readopted the 2016 platform as opposed to creating a new one. They'll create a new one in 2024, is what the resolution said. But I'm just curious, why do you think this happened?
Yeah, you know, I did hear from a few folks that one of the reasons that they had done that is because they weren't going to have the convention as it usually is. They weren't going to have as many voices. They weren't going to have as much input and feedback from the activists and the platform committee and those people elected as delegates to come. And so in a way, they thought it would be unfair to have a dearth of voices this time and just have a smaller contingent make those decisions for the entire party. So I can see that, and I can understand that view. But if you're going to adopt the 2016 platform, let's adopt that and kind of put that out there again as our platform, and instead of just saying refer back to 2016.
So you don't agree with this decision, and you've, you know, been very open and honest about that and public about that. Have you gotten anybody who doesn't like that you're saying that? Because you go into these convention weeks and everybody wants to hear unity, no matter which party you're in. They do not want anybody to look like they're not on message. Have you gotten pushback?
No, not too much. I've had a few people say, you know, I disagree with you. Even on social media saying, hey, I think the simplicity is good. I think the brevity is good. Let's move forward and let's win this thing in 2020. So I haven't gotten a ton of pushback. Had a few people who have disagreed with me, but that's okay. They're free to have their opinion. I still think it was a missed opportunity. And I never want to set the precedent that we're tying things to a personality only to principles and policy. So, and that's a good, healthy debate for us in the Republican Party as well. I don't think it takes away from the unity. I don't think it takes away from what can be accomplished during this convention week. But I think it's important to speak up and say that this was a missed opportunity.
For those who don't know, Matt Krause is one of the nicest guys in the Texas legislature. I mean, I don't know who would get mad at this guy. But thanks for answering Jason's question.
I'll send you a few Facebook. Yeah,
I bet you.
Messages.
I bet you got the receipts for that one, don't you?
That's right.
Let me ask you this, Matt. For an incumbent running for re-election, despite the office, they run on a record, and we've all seen what's happened with the COVID pandemic, and what's going on with the economy, which is a result of that. How hard is it going to be for the president to run on his record of the last 3.5 years?
Yeah, you're right. The pandemic kind of reset everything. Now, I do think that there are a few positives that the president can trumpet in the next week, because we've seen kind of a V-shaped curve with the economy. There's still more work to do, and certainly as I'm talking to these tourism folks, the economy's not back where it needs to be. But you look at the stock market, you look at some of the indicators of the economy, you look at jobs added, you look at people off the unemployment rolls. And those have all been some positive trends the last 2 or 3 months. And so what people thought might not ever kind of come back, we've seen a V-shaped recovery like a lot of people didn't think was going to happen. And I think that the president can speak on that, can take a lot of credit for that. But you're right. There's some things that looked like he was going to run on prior to COVID. That's going to suck up a lot of the oxygen heading into November.
I was going to say, isn't there a real danger here, though? There's a tightrope that has to be walked here, because you have seen a recovery, you know, especially if you look at the stock market. I mean, that bull's been running straight up. But there's millions and millions of people whose jobs have not been restored yet. And, you know, a lot of those people are not going to want to turn on the TV every night and see this, you know, celebration fest. You know, they're feeling the impact of this still. So isn't there a real tightrope to walk there to acknowledge those people, but then also talk about, hey, we've had some successes here too?
Oh, absolutely, Jason. You couldn't be more right. It's a very fine line. And some of what we've been saying for months now, for those who've been saying we got to get people back into their jobs and into their livelihoods, is you can keep people safe and healthy, focused on the most vulnerable populations, but allow people to get back to their jobs and earn money for their families and their livelihoods. Now, I do think that that was a big misstep from Joe Biden right towards the weekend, where he said, you know what, I'd shut the country down again. And so if you've got people at home who are worried about losing their jobs, wanting to get back into that job market, when you've got one candidate doing all he can to get people back into their jobs, and you've got another one saying, hey, I'm ready to shut this whole economy and this whole country down again, I think that's going to make for a very stark contrast for the voters. And I think that'll be a big deal going into November.
Matt, we're going to hear a lot of different perspectives from Republicans this week. What do you think are the top three things the president has done in this term?
Yeah, no, from a conservative standpoint, I think you look at his judicial nominations. I think we're almost at 250, if not over 250, strong conservative jurists that have been added to the federal benches all over the country and many different district judges, appellate courts, and even the Supreme Court. So I think that's a big deal. I think you look at the regulations that the president has cut and his administration has cut that has kind of created the environment for the economy to do so many good things. And then finally, on foreign policy, I think you look at the agreement between Israel and the UAE last week, which was a big deal. You look at the state of ISIS compared to where it was 3 or 4 years ago. And I think there's a lot of positives on the domestic and foreign policy fronts that he's going to be able to talk about and take credit for that's done a lot of good for our country.
Let me ask you something that we asked the Democrats last week during their convention, and that is, are you nervous about what could happen here in Texas? You know, for the first time in a long time, this state is really competitive as far as the presidential race goes. Polls have been really tight between these two tickets. And, you know, I just want to find out how you feel, how your colleagues are feeling about this right now, because, you know, we're getting close to this thing, and it's tight here in Texas. We were told by Democrats last week they were nervous about that. How do you feel about it?
Yeah, and that's a great question. As Jason knows, I'm an eternal optimist. So, I you know, I always look at it, not only the glass half full, but the water's overflowing out of it. So you always got to take that with a little grain of salt. But I feel really good about it. You're right. The polls were tightening up a little bit here in Texas, especially when we were in the thick of the pandemic. Joe Biden didn't have to be out there, wasn't saying anything, wasn't making any news. I think any incumbent president would have felt the effects of what was happening with the economy, with the pandemic and other things. And so those polls were tightening up. I think what you're going to see in the next 4 to 6 weeks, as the Texas Hispanic Foundation showed us last week, that Trump's opening that lead up to 7 points. We're working hard in our district and House District 93, reminding the voters of what we did last session. We're getting a great response. It looks really good where we are. We're one of the targeted districts. I think the lack of a any kind of national speaker at the Democrat convention last week, no Texans really highlighted, shows that they're not that serious about taking Texas. I think you see the comments from Biden's campaign that it's a massive media market. They haven't committed that many resources. Beto was even saying the Biden campaign's not doing what it takes to win in Texas. So I think they're seeing that it's trending away from them. And I'm feeling good about President Trump's chances here in Texas. I think he wins Texas. And I don't think it's as dire of a situation in the state house. I think Republicans keep the state house. And I think we've got a great message that resonates. $500 million to retired teachers, $800 million to border security, which keeps human trafficking, sex trafficking, illegal drugs from pouring into the state. I think we've got a great message, and we're just going to be trumpeting that until November 3rd.
And now I want to switch off before we let you go here, Matt. I want to ask about the legislature of which you're a member. The governor came out the other day and said that he has a bill to punish cities that would defund the police. I'm curious what you think about that and whether there's a better legislation that could be crafted. And secondly, you know, Democrats on a national level may not be, 100% about Texas. But on a statewide level, they're pretty confident they might take majority control of the Texas House. That would really change the game, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. If they were able to take the Texas House, especially in a redistricting year, you're right. It would change things. Now, I do think there's a big difference between 2018 and 2020, though, and they're using 2018 as a lot of basis for their optimism. As I told somebody the other day, Beto won Tarrant County by a small percentage in 2018. The Beto we know now that wants to take away your guns and tax your churches could not win Tarrant County in 2020. So you can't just automatically assume you're going to have all the carry forward that you had in 2018. But even in that environment, when it was about as hospitable and good for Democrats as possible, they weren't able to take over the Texas House. And I just don't think they're going to get there this time. And I appreciate what the governor said about standing up for our law enforcement officials and making sure that we are defending the police, not defending, like I said earlier. And so I think we ought to look at a bunch of different legislative ideas that if you're going to be a local government that defunds the police or in any way puts its citizens in harm by taking away resources from those law enforcement officials, Texas needs to stand strong and say, we back the blue and we're going to be there for you.
Matt, it's always good to talk to you, man.
Yeah, hey, you too. Thanks for having me on. I love it. Ever since I heard Yolitics, I thought, man, that is a great name for a show. So thanks for having me on. It's always good talking with you.
All right, so that is Representative Matt Krause here in Texas talking about the Republican National Convention going on this week. You know, interesting thing that he said there, Jason, and I want to see how this plays out. I don't know if President Trump got the memo on this one, but he says that last week the Democratic National Convention seemed like it was kind of a dark affair, like there was anger, there was fear being broadcast out. And he says, this is going to be a whole different thing than that. We're not going to have anger. We're not going to have fear. And it will be interesting to see that because, you know, everybody knows President Trump prides himself on being a big counterpuncher and doesn't usually head up to the podium, you know, just for the love fest. And so it will be interesting to see how starkly things are put at the Republican convention. We will see if Matt's vision indeed plays out this week, because, Jason, as you know, a big way that candidates drive people to the polls, and I'm not saying from one party or the other, a big way sometimes that you can get your base energized, though, is with anger and fear about the other candidate.
And you see darkness or light depending on where you are from each party as well, too. So those
right.
who are, you know, members of the GOP, they might, you know, look at the DNC and say, that's all Biden talked about. That's all Kamala talked about.
Right.
And Democrats might say, oh, what, are you kidding me? Look at what President Trump
and
has
that's
done
all they'll
the
see
last
this week.
Three and a half
yeah.
years. That's exactly right. So, you know, this is a topical podcast. And for, you know, for a little explanation on that, we try to record this podcast just before we release it so we can get the latest information in here. This is not one of those
right.
that's recorded, a week or two ahead of time. So because of that, we wanted to wait and call the delegates once they had gotten to Charlotte. Not all 155 Republican delegates actually went to Charlotte, North Carolina for the Texas Republican Party. Just a handful of them went. Nevertheless, we have reached out to a handful of them. And as you can imagine, Jason, those handful, because there are fewer there this year, are super busy
right.
doing a million things. And on Monday, they delegates formally renominated Donald Trump as the for a second term as a Republican choice for president. President Trump showed up to speak in the
yep.
morning. He's apparently going to speak all 4 days as well, too. This is not like we've seen. This is, you know, clearly nothing like we've seen before. And fewer delegates
right.
there means it's a heck of a lot harder to get them for you, Jason.
It is. And, you know, some of them even took our calls, which was nice of them, but then immediately said, man, there's no way. I don't even have. Hey, come on, man. Just give me 5 minutes. No, I don't even have 5 minutes for you. I'm heading from one meeting over to another meeting and I just can't do it. And then we catch the plane out and then it's over with because, you know, they're trying to minimize the amount of time that they're there and around each other and so forth. And we even had one who said, man, I'm a big fan of the podcast and I'm still not going to do it because I'm too busy to do it. So we really tried to get a delegate on here. We wanted to talk to an actual delegate from Texas, and we don't want to talk to a delegate from like Kansas or some other place that they might point us to. We want to talk to someone from Texas. So not happening.
Not happening on that front, but we have somebody else that we were able to speak with. This is Donald Trump Jr. A couple days ago, got a phone call, and they said, the Trump campaign said, hey, would you like to talk to Donald Trump Jr.? Absolutely. What, are you kidding me? Yes, we definitely want to talk to him. So we did a Zoom with him a couple of days ago and asked him a number of things, asked him, you know, what the president's plan for 4 more years would look like, whether Donald Trump Jr., as a senior advisor and the son of the president, would, in fact, accept the results of the November election as well. We had a handful of questions for him. This is a Zoom that I did a couple of days ago, and he answered them all here. Mr. Trump, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you.
Let's talk about the case for a second term. What are the marquee items the president wants to tackle in a second term if he's reelected that he hasn't been able to accomplish so far?
Well, listen, I think we'd love to see him work with Democrats to be able to get an infrastructure bill. I think everyone recognizes that the infrastructure of this country has become dilapidated. Donald Trump is a builder. He understands how to do these things. He's done, tried to work with Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats on this, which is why it's so important to take back the House, because they don't want to give Donald Trump yet another economic win. But especially now, coming out of the COVID crisis, putting Americans back to work, rebuilding our infrastructure is going to be so critical. And Donald Trump is legitimately the perfect guy for that, because he's been a builder his entire life. He understands how to get that done.
I want to talk about the Republican National Convention is coming up here, too. What will your dad's main message be next Thursday night when he accepts the nomination again?
Well, listen, I think he's going to talk about rebuilding America, bringing it back from the China virus. The reality is, before this, you know, flu hit, America was in the greatest economic position it had ever been. The lowest unemployment numbers in history for African Americans, for Hispanic Americans, for women, for every demographic possible. The highest new startup business for the same group of people. The lowest income earners for the first time in modern history. Their wages were actually going up. That didn't happen by accident. That happened because Donald Trump had a plan.
Speaking of the November election, will you accept the results of what happens in November?
100%. You know, if things are done fairly, right? I mean, to arbitrarily say that is a little ridiculous. You see what's going on with some of the mail-in balloting push. We're fine with absentee balloting, where we've said that 100%, where there's a system, but where randomly you blanket mail hundreds of millions of ballots to people who may not be living in those places is a system that's ripe with fraud. And you don't have to just believe me. Look at Jerry Nadler, not exactly a conservative. He said that about New York. New York right now is, I think, 50 something days post a primary. They still don't know who won because of that disaster. So utilizing existing things that have worked in the past is fine. But to try to rework that system for 350 million people 70 days out seems pretty ridiculous.
Mr. Trump, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It's great being with you.
Jason, I've never interviewed Donald Trump Jr. I you know, got a couple of questions off to his dad at a press conference when he was running in 2016. And of course, I've seen Donald Trump Jr. a lot, but it was interesting to get his perspective on this race, especially considering the calendar. We are a little more than 2 months away. You know, Labor Day is traditionally the, you know, the quote unquote start of the election season, and it's going to fly over the next 2 months. There's no question about it.
Yeah, it's going to feel like a time warp here. And you know, an interesting thing, you're going to feel it, I think, here in Texas more after this convention wraps up this week and we do get into that official stretch run there that we typically have in one of these seasons, because we're going to be getting bombarded with ads here in Texas. You know, we talked earlier about those tight polls between Trump and Biden here in Texas. Texas considered on a lot of political maps right now. You'll see it shaded in gray or in stripes or whatever it may be for that particular map, because it's considered to be a battleground this time around. And we haven't seen that in a very long time here in Texas, Jason. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out and what those polls continue to look like here in Texas. Can the Democrats really scoot in there and make this a true fight over the Lone Star State? Because we've talked about this before. If you took the map from 2016 and you left all the red states red and all the blue states blue, but you flipped only Texas, it would have changed the outcome of which party won the White House. So this is a big prize if you can get it. And they're going to be trying to get it, both of them.
Yeah, no question. And Republicans are looking at the latest poll here, at least Texas Republicans.
Yeah.
Latest poll in the state about, what, 10 days ago, I believe. It's the Texas Hispanic Policy Foundation. It was the very first piece of analysis that it commissioned and revealed. But it showed that President Trump has widened his lead 47-40 over Joe Biden. Nevertheless, polls have shown this is going to be a tight race. Republicans know it's going to be a tight race. Who wins? We're still 69 days or so away from that. The big thing moving forward, Jason, I think for both parties, is maintaining momentum. Yeah, all the Democrats are stoked right now after that convention they had last week. Republicans going into theirs, they're going to be stoked, you know, this time next week after that. But you still have 60 plus days. I asked Veronica Escobar, who is a congresswoman. She took over was elected to Beto O'Rourke's seat, the seat that Congressman O'Rourke had after he gave that up to run for Senate. And I asked her the other day, I said, how do you maintain momentum and all that energy that Democrats had? This is the same regardless of whether you're R or D. But one thing she said is we can't, you know, because of social distancing and separation, we can't be face to face. We can't shake hands and lift babies and things like that anymore. So get ready for the phone calls, she said. Get ready for the text messages. Get ready for Facebook ads. Any way they can reach out and get to you, that's where the candidates are going to be over the next 2 months, Jason.
Because amazingly, we've talked about this, there are actually still a good number of people who say that they haven't totally made up their mind. You know, you think that you've made yours up and everybody you know has made theirs up because you hear them ranting or raving every day about this candidate or that. There's still a sizable percentage of people who say that they could still be persuaded one way or the other. So I don't know how they've gotten this far and not been persuaded yet by one of the two sides, but there are still some people who are sitting on the fence kind of thinking this through at this point.
It's amazing, for as polarized as everything is, that there are people still like that as well, too. Either way, you should be voting for Yolitics and going down there and leave us some comments on this as well, too, when you subscribe. We appreciate you listening this week. We'll be back to talk about what happened at the RNC. We'll mention some of that in next week's episode as well. Hope you have a good week.